Regional banks implode, the Fed and the Treasury are back in bailout mode, and stocks manage to finish the week up despite all the volatility. I'm Graham Summers, and this is Bulls, Bears, and BS. Welcome back to Bulls, Bears, and BS. I'm Graham Summers, Chief Market Strategist for Phoenix Capital Research, and today is Sunday, March 19th, 2023. Vladimir Lenin once said that there are decades in which nothing happens, and then there are weeks in which decades happen. And last week was one of the latter. If you wind the clock back 2 weeks, we were in the following framework. The Fed appeared to be behind the curve again in terms of inflation. The inflationary data from October, November, and December of 2022 had all been revised higher. The inflationary data for January and February had come in hotter than expected. And it appeared as if the Fed was once again going to have to flip-flop policy. What I mean by this was that March was shaping up to look as if the Fed was going to hike rates by 0.5% because it was going to have to get more aggressive to slow down the pace of inflation. And remember, inflation's still at 6% despite the Fed raising rates from 0.25% to 4.75% in the span of a single year. That was where things were 2 weeks ago. Fast forward to now, there's talk of the Fed pausing. Some people are calling for the Fed to cut rates. The Fed and the Treasury have bailed out the system again with a $25 billion bailout fund. They've created a new credit facility that JP Morgan estimates could provide as much as $2 trillion in liquidity to the system. And we're in the midst of a regional banking crisis, which honestly doesn't appear to be over. So again, this was a week in which decades happened. So the big question now is, how did we get here and what's going on? And to understand that, we need to have a little historical context. The last high inflationary regime that the United States experienced was in the 1970s. And what this means as far as the investment community is concerned is that anyone who was alive then and actively involved in the markets or the banking system is now in their 60s or their 70s, assuming they haven't already retired and they're still active. Put another way, several generations of hedge fund managers, pension fund managers, bank executives, Wall Street analysts, and strategists have all had their entire careers take place in a deflationary regime, or a regime in which debt over time became cheaper and cheaper. So it's not too surprising that these people weren't really aware or prepared to handle an inflationary regime. Despite all of the Fed interventions over the last 30 years, inflation never really fully entered the financial system in ways that it has now. And this set the stage for a really massive set of screw-ups on the part of the financial community and the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve throughout 2022 kept telling us inflation was transitory, meaning it's this weird aberration in which year-over-year data is showing inflation's an issue, but in reality, it's not going to be a big problem, and it's naturally going to kind of phase itself out. Similarly, once the Fed finally pivoted and said, oh, inflation is a major problem in November of 2022, it appears as if most people in the financial system didn't take the Fed seriously. The reason I say this is because if the Fed's going to start aggressively hiking rates, that means that bond yields are going to go up and bond prices are going to go down. And this is going to present a major 1-2 punch for the banks. First and foremost, we need to understand how banks work. So traditionally, the way banking works is you put your money in a deposit. The bank pays you a short-term interest rate that's usually quite low on that deposit. The bank then turns around and loans out $5, $6, $7, $8, or even $9 or $10, or buys that same amount worth of long-duration assets, like mortgage-backed securities or long-term treasuries. So essentially, banks are a play on interest rates. They pay a short-term, low interest rate on deposits, and they earn a larger long-term interest rate on loans and on long-duration assets. So if the Fed's going to aggressively hike interest rates, first and foremost, this gives banks some competition for deposits. If a bank's only paying you, I believe the average is 0.23% APY on your deposits, but you can earn 4% or 5% in money market funds or short-term treasuries, why on earth would you keep your money in a bank? And this is indeed what people have been doing. They've been pulling money out of their deposits. 2022 was the first year since 1948 in which money on a net basis left the banking system in the form of deposits fleeing. The second punch of this 1-2 punch combo is the fact that if bond yields rise, this means that bond prices fall. So in simple terms, the 30-plus year bull market in bonds that we've had since 1982 was officially over. Instead, we were in a bear market for bonds, which again, nobody, unless they're in their 60s or 70s, has any direct experience with. And I don't think many people in the banking community took the Fed too seriously when the Fed says it's going to start raising rates aggressively, because if they did, they would have either sold some of this stuff or they would have hedged it, because otherwise they're sitting on massive losses. And that's indeed what's happened. As of late 2022, banks are collectively sitting on $630 billion in unrealized losses on their loan portfolios and their long-duration asset portfolios. What I mean by unrealized losses is they haven't hit sell yet, but they still have to record this stuff, but for some reason people are ignoring it. I mean, it's as if the banking system was literally screaming, we've lost a fortune on these assets, but nobody seemed to think the banks were going to end up in trouble. So this was the 1-2 punch that caught banks off guard, and in the case of the Silicon Valley Bank, which was the canary in the coal mine for this whole mess, there was added components. That bank in particular appeared to have thrown a lot of risk protocols out the window in terms of its lending standards. It also had this weird kind of scheme going on through which VC funds would park their capital at the bank. The bank would then loan money to the companies that the VC funds were investing in, but only on the condition that those same startups parked the cash back in the bank. So it was this weird sort of circular incestuous thing going on in which money's just leaving and coming back, but more and more loans are being generated. Indeed, Silicon Valley Bank grew quite rapidly through this and through some of the COVID and pandemic protocols that the government and Fed put into place. They went from the 42nd largest bank in the U.S. to the 15th with assets of $209 billion. Similarly, their share price erupted higher from $125 a share to $750 a share in the span of about 20 months. So you're talking about a bank that grew really quite aggressively and did so by engaging in schemes that really didn't make a whole lot of sense outside of a zero interest rate environment or an economic lockdown. So this brings us to what happened 2 weeks ago. So 2 weeks ago, Silicon Valley Bank started having a bank run. Some of the same VC funds started pulling their money out of the bank. And this forced the bank to have to start selling assets, because remember, for every dollar in deposits that a bank has, they have $5, $6, $7, $8, even $9 or $10 worth of loans or long duration assets that they've bought. So when that dollar leaves the deposit, the bank has to unload the $5, $7, $8, $9 or $10 worth of loans or long duration assets to maintain its capital requirements. And money was leaving Silicon Valley Bank, but not a little bit, quite a lot. The VC funds were pulling their larger deposits out. This precipitated the bank having to engage in a fire sale. I believe they unloaded something like $22 billion worth of assets at a major loss, which then induced more of a panic from depositors, and a bank run took place. Now, the Fed and the Treasury moved to kind of prop this thing up for two reasons. One, and this is extremely cynical, but I believe it's true, the people who banked with this Silicon Valley Bank were very politically connected, specifically to the Democrat Party. We're talking about Silicon Valley billionaires, major tech founders, Oprah, people like that. These people all had billions of dollars sitting at this bank. And if they go broke, then the Democrat Party loses a major source of its campaign financing. Let me put it this way. If this same bank had been based in Oklahoma or Louisiana, I really doubt the Fed or the Treasury would have moved anywhere near as rapidly to prop this thing up. The second reason why the Fed and the Treasury moved to engage in, you know, a bailout for Silicon Valley Bank was that it was causing a contagion. And the reason it was causing a contagion is because Silicon Valley Bank was technically what you would call a regional bank, and there's a lot of these in this country, and roughly $5.5 trillion is sitting in deposits in these regional banks. Now, the FDIC only insures up to $250,000 of a deposit. So anything above that technically can just be lost if a bank goes under. And the Fed and the Treasury were terrified that this collapse in Silicon Valley Bank was going to cause major bank runs. Because remember, banks are already experiencing a deposit flight due to the fact that they're paying almost nothing in interest, and you can earn 4 or 5% in money market funds or short-term treasury. So it's one thing to take your money out of a bank because you're concerned that you're not earning as much as you could with, you know, the low interest rate. It's another to take your money out of a bank because you're terrified the bank might fail. And it's this second option that had the Fed and the Treasury looking to actively get involved in the regional banking system in the Pacific West. Because think of it this way. If even $1 or $2 trillion of the $5.5 trillion sitting on regional bank deposits fled, those same banks would have to unload $5, $7, maybe even $10 trillion worth of assets in order for them to maintain their capital requirements. And they wouldn't be able to do this in an orderly fashion. They would have to sell rapidly and most likely at a major loss. And this is the kind of thing that could trigger a deflationary crisis. So that's probably the bigger reason why the Fed and the Treasury moved to bail these guys out. But in reality, the whole thing was kind of ridiculous because, according to the people I know, Silicon Valley Bank depositors probably would have gotten 80 or even 90% of their deposits back if the bank had failed. So really, this wasn't even a major crisis as far as that one bank was concerned. But yet, the Fed and the Treasury moved to step in, probably because they were afraid of bank runs hitting the entire regional banking system. So when Silicon Valley Bank imploded and we had contagion, because I believe 7 or 8 other banks had to be halted because their share prices collapsed by as much as 70 or 80% last week, something happened to the bond market. We moved into a deflationary regime, meaning bond prices aggressively rallied and bond yields collapsed. And in fact, this was the largest, most rapid collapse in bond yields over a few days since the 1987 crash. So this alleviated quite a bit of pressure for the banks. If they were sitting on $630 billion in unrealized losses, that number's probably much lower now because treasuries rallied so much on a flight to safety. And this also creates a secondary effect, which is now the Fed is worried about a banking collapse, but it's also trying to end inflation with inflation at 6%. One part of this is the Fed has completely abandoned quantitative tightening, which is the process by which it reduces the size of its balance sheet. Last week, the Fed expanded its balance sheet by $300 billion. That's $300 billion of expansion in the span of 5 days. This tells us that behind the scenes, things were actually quite dire in the banking system because $164 billion of that $300 billion came in the form of loans or emergency loans from the Fed to banks. So put simply, there was a really massive need for capital on the part of the banking system last week. And that's why the Fed opened the discount window and various other facilities through which banks could get access to capital courtesy of the Fed's money. So in simple terms, the Fed now has this conundrum. It's experiencing a banking crisis of sorts. And even if the bailout does work and calms people down, the bailout doesn't stop the fact that money's still going to leave banks' deposits because it can earn a higher rate of return at money market funds or short-term treasuries. The second component is inflation's still at 6%. So you've got the Fed potentially needing to raise rates aggressively to bring that down at the same time that it's expanding its balance sheet by $300 billion and it's ended quantitative tightening. Now, what it did, the Fed that is, last week, is not quite the same thing as quantitative easing. Quantitative easing is when the Fed prints money and uses it to buy assets from banks. These were loans that the Fed just made, so it's a little bit different, but the point stands. The Fed's essentially back to easing again, at least as far as its balance sheet is concerned, while at the same time it's tightening as far as interest rates are concerned. So now we're at this major crossroads. The Fed is due to announce its monetary policy decision for March next week. If it raises rates, this will again precipitate a lot more money leaving banks to go into short-term treasuries and money market funds, which in turn will precipitate banks having to sell loans and long-duration assets to try to maintain their capital requirements. So that's a problem because it only accelerates all of these issues, and since we've already had multiple banks have to be halted or be bailed out or go under, that's going to accelerate aggressively. And remember, we're talking not a small amount of money, we're talking $5.5 trillion sitting on these regional banks' balance sheets. But if the Fed doesn't hike rates next week, then we have a completely different problem because inflation's still at 6%. So if the Fed's effectively saying, hey, we're done tightening for now, even though inflation's at 6% because the Fed's scared of a banking crisis, well, then inflation's going to completely explode higher. So the Fed's really backed into a corner here, and it remains to be seen how exactly it can get out of this. Personally, I don't really think there's a positive outcome here. I think the question is, are we going to have something really bad now or something far worse later? The something really bad now would be the Fed raises rates by 0.25% or even 0.5%, just like the ECB did last week, and we see all of these issues related to banks accelerate. That would probably be the bad news is right now, and the Fed would have to be forced to somehow backstop the entire financial system, which is probably why JP Morgan has assessed that the new credit facility the bank set up with the Treasury could rise to as much as $2 trillion. So that'd be the bad news now, hopefully stability later. The alternative option is the Fed doesn't raise rates, inflation begins to rage, there's a big relief rally in assets, but bonds begin to completely implode because, again, remember, Treasury yields trade based on inflation, among other things. So the Treasury market enters a more aggressive bear market, which in turn sets the stage for a debt crisis for the United States. The U.S. now has over $31 trillion in debt outstanding and a debt-to-GDP ratio of 120%. If the Fed announces effectively that it's going to let inflation rage in this country, well, then the Treasury market's going to begin to implode, and we're ultimately going to end up with a debt crisis in this country. Think of it this way. 2 years ago, if the United States issued debt, short-term debt, it only paid like 0.25% on that. Now it's paying 5%. So debt payments are rising astronomically and very quickly if that begins to happen at an accelerated pace. We're going to get to the point where the United States is going to be spending most of its money on debt payments, and it might itself need to be bailed out by the Fed. All of this is crazy. This is the stuff people have been talking about for decades, and it's finally coming here. So really, this is an extremely dangerous time to be investing.
And anybody who tells you you need to be fully invested right now is out of their minds.
I've urged all of our clients to have most of their money in cash ever since this bear market really caught wind in April of 2022. And it's really the important thing here is to survive. Yes, there will be people who make a lot of money trading this, but there's also going to be far more people that lose everything. And the goal of with dealing with a bear market is to survive so that when the bear market's over, you can invest at absurdly low valuations and generate actual generational wealth. That's how Buffett's done things. You buy when there's blood in the streets. We're not there yet. What happened last week wasn't Lehman Brothers or AIG. This was the Bear Stearns moment for this crisis that's coming. So again, now is the time to be extremely careful. We've just had so many things begin to unfold. There's a lot of major moving parts. All of this is also taking place in Europe with the bank Credit Suisse, which is not Silicon Valley Bank. It's a major, huge bank that has more assets than Switzerland's GDP. So again, this is a very dangerous time. It's a time for us to be extremely careful and cautious. Don't play unless you absolutely have to. Because as this thing progresses, depending on what happens, we're going to have to invest completely differently. If the Fed announces it's going to let inflation rage, you need to be completely outside of bonds, have some exposure to stocks, and have a lot of exposure to precious metals because precious metals are going to skyrocket. If the Fed continues to hike rates to end inflation and indicates it doesn't care as much about banking as it does about ending inflation, then you invest completely differently. You need to be in short-term T-bills, out of stocks, and out of precious metals. So again, what we do going forward completely hinges on what the Fed announces next week, and no one knows that information yet. And in fact, the Fed itself has said that depending on how the markets react to all of this, they may hike rates or not hike rates. So again, this is a ridiculous situation. You've got the most important central bank in the world making things up on the fly. You've got it trying to navigate a banking crisis, and you've got it also trying to end inflation all at the same time. It's an absolute mess. So again, stay safe out there. Don't play unless you have to, and let's see what comes this week. I'm Graham Summers, and this is Bulls, Bears, and BS.